in the first half of the gospel, he's going around Galilee teaching very wonderfully and getting into controversy with people and healing people and performing exorcisms. And on his travels, he and his disciples move further and further north, north of the Sea of Galilee, right up the top of the Jordan Valley to Caesarea Philippi, at the very source of the Jordan. And there, it's in chapter 8 of Mark, it's in chapter 16 of Matthew, the chapter before the one we've just been reading from this morning. There, Jesus says to the disciples, "Now, who do you think I am?" And Peter says, "You're the Messiah." Now, don't assume that when Peter said, "You're the Messiah," he meant everything that we Christians now might mean by the Messiah, because we've all redefined in the Christian community what a Messiah is in the light of what goes on to happen to Jesus. But Peter says, "You're the Messiah." A traditional term, it means the anointed one. It was the term normally applied to the king of Israel in the time when there were kings in ancient Israel. It's the one who will come, who will restore our fortunes, who will perhaps restore the political state, who will some other way make things well and usher in the final and wonderful state of affairs. And Jesus says to Peter, "You're so right, I am the Messiah, and I'm on my way to Jerusalem to suffer and to die, to give himself," although he doesn't make it quite so explicit yet in the story, "to give himself in love for them, for us all, for the world." And having reached this northernmost point in the story, Jesus turns round and he starts to walk southwards. And from now on in the gospel, he's walking towards Jerusalem. He goes in no other direction, down towards Jerusalem. And quite early on in the journey, they arrive at Mount Tabor and the transfiguration happens. And it's linked with Jesus's prediction, the first of three predictions in the gospel, of his coming suffering. The glory will lie in the love that gives itself away. This is what will reveal the glory of God in a way that it never was fully seen on Sinai. It's when Jesus allows himself to be arrested, to be taken to Golgotha, to stretch out his arms, to give to the drops of his blood himself for his people. That is where the glory of God will be clear, and then wonderfully clear again in the resurrection. And in that sense, there is some truth in the idea that the transfiguration is a kind of anticipation of some of the resurrection stories as well. Not in the sense that some skeptical German scholars used to think that it was a resurrection story that had ended up in the wrong place in the gospel, but in the sense that it just catches that sense that the resurrection is the vindication, the proof that love is stronger than death, and the glory of God on Mount Tabor, the glory of God as shown in the transfigured Jesus, is about his gift of himself, his commitment to the terrible journey that lies ahead. And now you can perhaps see why we read it this morning. We are, in the 40 days of Lent, going to be journeying with Jesus towards Jerusalem. And so the tradition of the church gives us this gospel to reflect today on the glory of God in Jesus' self-giving love. And then we'll walk with him through the days of Lent until we come to Jerusalem in Holy Week. And in Holy Week, there we ourselves, with the eye of faith and in our experiencing of the events of the gospel through the elaborate liturgies of the week, we too may catch a glimpse of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. To him with Father and Spirit be glory and majesty, now and always. Amen.